last case today, U.S. versus Brandt.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is William J. Cohen. I'm an attorney appointed for the defendant, Corey Brandt. I represented Mr. Brandt in the trial. Mr. Brandt was convicted of lying to federal agents under 18 U.S.C. 1001. In the brief, I point out that there are significant questions concerning the facts supporting the conviction. As Mr. Brandt was at his house when federal agents came to see him to question him about a sale of an AK-47 rifle. At the time, the agents knew that the rifle had been sold. They didn't know who the buyer was. They contacted Corey Brandt. They asked him whether he was involved in the sale. And at that time, according to the agents, he said no, and the agents informed him that if he continued with his denial, that he could be prosecuted for lying to a federal agent. The defendant's version of the facts of that meeting are substantially different than the agent's version. According to the defendant, the agents asked him about the sale of the AK-47, or asked him about his meeting with another individual and who owned the rifle. And when they got to the part of him leaving with the other individual, according to the defendant, he stated he didn't know what they were talking about. At that point, he stopped all further conversation. I submitted to the district court an instruction that was gleaned from the Fifth Circuit in a case, U.S. versus Rodriguez. And in that instruction, I submitted to the district court, the instruction was provided that if the defendant's statements were mere negative responses to questions propounded to him by an investigating agent during a question and answer conference not initiated by him, under circumstances indicating that the defendant was unaware that he was under investigation, then the defendant's statements may not be material or willful under 18 U.S.C. 1001.
Well that is questionable today, that proposition. But here, the evidence, at least the evidence from the government, is that he went far beyond just a simple, I don't know anything about it.
Assume
it was expansive. That he had nothing to do with this AK-47 thing, didn't know anything about it, and the government claimed that was a lie. And
I would like to address your first comment, Your Honor, that instruction would no longer be the law. I don't believe that's correct. That's what Judge Miller found. But I believe that a reading of Brogan versus U.S.
Well, that's a relying on a Souter's concurring opinion or something.
Yes, Your Honor. And when you reread Brogan versus U.S. at the very beginning, the Supreme Court expressly states that they are not considering whether or not the actions of Brogan were willful or false. They specifically did not address that issue in their opinion. And when Justice Souter and Justice Ginsburg, in their concurring opinion, expanded upon that, I think they made clear that in Brogan, the Supreme Court did not eliminate the type of instruction that I tendered to the district court. In fact, I think that instruction would have been approved by the Supreme Court in Brogan, because that instruction goes to the issue of willfulness and intent. In this case, in response now, Your Honor, to your question, wasn't that more than just a mere denial? To the extent that that was, and I would concede here that that's probably more than a mere denial in some ways, But I would submit to the court that whether or not that statement was a willful and wanton lie to a federal agent really was the issue in this case, and that the instruction that
Why isn't that a jury question?
Pardon?
And why isn't that a jury question?
That is a jury question. That's absolutely a jury question. And the jury didn't get a chance to really properly address that question because my instruction was not given by the district court. And it was, I believe, an instruction that is a valid statement of the law at that time and the law at this time. As I pointed out in my brief, during the instruction conference, Judge Miller informed me of the U.S. Brogan versus U.S. opinion. And because I had been traveling during the course of the trial from my office in Elkhart to the court in South Bend, I did not receive my electronic notices from the court, and I did not see that the court had cited Brogan versus U.S. You will note in the instruction conference, I cite a portion of our discussion between the judge and myself, in which I stated that while I had not read Brogan, I postulated to the court that I didn't believe that Brogan would have eliminated the instruction that I tendered. In fact, now that I've read Brogan, I think Brogan clearly provides that that instruction would have been a valid instruction. In fact, Justice Ginsburg and Justice Souter, in their concurring opinion, expressly discuss the willful and wanton issue and point out that a mere denial is not proof of knowledge or intent, and that in order to convict the defendant, the government's going to have to prove more than just a mere denial or I didn't know. They have to submit more evidence than that. And in doing so, and in looking at the issue of whether there's willful or wanton conduct on the part of the defendant, you have to look at the entire circumstances of that conversation. And that's why, in this case, the fact that the defendant did not initiate that conversation, that this was not an investigation that was focused on the defendant, but rather was simply a meeting that the agents had with the defendant to find out some information concerning someone else. And when the defendant simply chose that or stated, I don't know anything more about it, and the agents, he then asked the agents, was he under arrest? And the agent said no. He simply turned around and went back into his apartment. Given those circumstances, I believe that the instruction that I tendered to the district court follows those facts that were presented during the course of the trial. I think that they do present what I believe would be a defense and a defense under Brogan, and that when the district court refused that instruction, then I believe that the district court erred as a matter of law and that this court can review that issue de novo. I would like to save a little bit of time for my rebuttal. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, Jesse Barrett for the United States, and I also was trial counsel. I also apologize in advance. I'm struggling with a sore throat here, so hopefully you'll be able to understand me. Turning first to the evidentiary question, I think it's important to note what our standard of review is here. The motion for judgment of acquittal was not renewed, so we're not even facing the typical standard of review for a sufficiency argument. We're facing a manifest miscarriage standard of review. So as an initial matter, Mr. Brandt comes before this court with an immense burden to meet to have this jury verdict overturned. As to the sufficiency of the evidence itself, this is a not atypical situation where agents render one version of a statement of a conversation in which a false statement occurred, and a defendant, and in this case his girlfriend, provide another interpretation and explanation of what happened. According to the agents, though, whose testimony the jury was free to believe, Mr. Brandt lied multiple times during their conversation. He stated that he had not seen Mr. Beck since the night at the bar where the gun sale had occurred, although that was false. He stated that he had been at the bar all evening the night the gun sale occurred. That was false. He told agents that he did not know what they were talking about when they asked him about the sale. That was false. After being warned three times that it was a crime to lie to agents, he told agents twice that there was no gun on that night. And then fifth, he affirmed the body of his testimony one last time before the agents left. This is nothing even close to a simple denial of guilt, and there is more than sufficient evidence under any standard to satisfy a sufficiency hurdle for the government, much less one where the manifest miscarriage standard applies. And then turning secondly to the exculpatory no instruction, frankly, I think it's a bizarre argument that Mr. Brandt places before this court. There is no doubt that the exculpatory no doctrine did not survive Brogan. Every case to have addressed the exculpatory no doctrine since Brogan has held that the exculpatory no doctrine did not survive Brogan. It is without doubt the case that Justice Souter's concurrence carries no precedential weight. What we have here is a defendant arguing for an exculpatory no doctrine when that doctrine no longer exists. And even if it did, it wouldn't apply on the facts here. And particularly highlighting that is that the language that is quoted in the proposed instruction comes from a case which has been since overruled by Rodriguez-Rios in the Fifth Circuit to the effect that the exculpatory no doctrine no longer exists. So even the case law that Mr. Brandt cites in support of his exculpatory no doctrine is no longer good law. So for those reasons, we would request that the court affirm the jury verdict. And if there are no questions, I don't have anything else to add.
Thank you, Mr. Berg.
Thank you.
Mr. Cohen, how much time? You have about 1.5 minutes.
Thank you. At the beginning of the Brogan decision, Judge Scalia, in his opinion, points out that the petitioner does not contest that his utterance was false or that it was made knowingly and willfully. That is not the case here. In this case, the argument is that the defendant did not make his statement knowingly and willfully, and he didn't do so because he didn't know he was under an investigation. He didn't know that he was the focus of a crime. He was there simply talking to the federal agents. And once he learned that they asked questions about his involvement, he simply stated he didn't know, and he retired, ended the conversation, went back into his apartment. Under those circumstances, the focus on knowing and willful is very important. The instruction that I tendered to the district court did cover that issue of the knowing and willful, and it is something that is a question of fact that the jury should have decided, but they didn't get that opportunity because they didn't get the instruction that gave them the guidance that they could consider that in acquitting the defendant. And had Judge Miller granted my request for that instruction, I think the defendant would have received a fair trial, and the issue of willful and wanton could have been decided by the jury. But since the district court denied my instruction, there was not sufficient instruction for the jury. Thank you.
Mr. Cohen, you're appointed, and the court thanks you for your taking the case and participating further. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
From the conference room, correct?
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
Thank you.
do, 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 do.